Hey, and after a few weeks break, the PhD cast is back. This week, we're talking about branded content, the theme of this week's Mumbrella Conference. We talk about Burberry's Regent Street store, how Heineken are getting people dropped, Chipotle's scapegoat film, and how do you measure the effectiveness of branded content. We're back. It's the PhD cast from PhD Austin. Hey, I'm Chris Stevenson, and joining me on the PhD cast this week, PhD cast regulars, Peter Hunter, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad.
Good to have you along. And Emma?
Hello.
How are you doing? You well?
Yes, very good, thank you.
Cool. And joining us for the first time on the PhD cast, new to PhD Australia, but not new to PhD, it's Christian Zvara. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm really, really fine, actually. Glad to be here.
And this is your second week?
Middle of the third week. End of third.
I've been away, so I'm allowed to not know. So how's it going so far? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, it's really awesome so far. I'm learning a lot, meeting a lot of exciting people, having a lot of exciting experiences like this cast.
Good.
And the weather's great too.
And the weather is really awesome. Much better in Budapest.
Nice, let's get, well, I can imagine. Right, let's get to it. Emma, this week, Mumbrella had their festival of branded entertainment, not branded content, branded entertainment. You went along.
Yes.
What happened? What was it all about? What was the festival for?
Okay, yep, so I went along yesterday to Luna Park in Sydney, and it was a day-long conference. Actually, they had some stuff on Wednesday as well, but this was the main conference for the day. Just discussing lots of different areas around, you know, what is branded content and entertainment, what does it look like, sharing some best-in-class examples, so discussing what was great about it. There were some great speakers there. We had some interesting debates around some of the issues around creating, where does the line sit between branded content and advertising, how do we measure, it was just a really interesting, informative day. It was really good.
Amazing. And who were the delegates? Was it mainly agency people? Were there some clients there? Was it creative agencies, media agencies? Types like your good self?
Yes. I'd say probably a lot more agency side, and that is a mix of media, creative, content. In fact, that's sort of a theme that came up in terms of, where do these things sit sometimes? Which agency takes what? There were some clients there as well, as well as some suppliers and a few publishers. So YouTube and Facebook were there, and a few others. It was a good mix.
Amazing stuff. We'll get into some of the specifics of some of the individual sessions and some of the specific work. But Peter, just coming to you on this, how important is branded entertainment content becoming specifically in the digital area, which is what you head up here at PhD Australia? How important is content, this idea of branded entertainment, becoming?
Yeah, look, it's kind of, I guess the guts of it is it comes back to storytelling. And when we're engaging with people via digital channels, the idea of entertaining them past a 30-second commercial is pretty important. I think one of the probably slightly scary things that seems to be coming out of these types of conferences is this idea of lines again. I think we need to make sure that doesn't happen.
Lines?
So the idea of where is the line between branded content and social. Let's not have a line, and let's, let consumers work out how and where things sit and how we amplify content.
I think PhD established years ago in our book Fluid that the world exists of blurs now rather than hard lines between anything. If you haven't had a chance to read Fluid, it is available on Amazon. And all proceeds go to UNICEF.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the examples that seem to come up in yesterday's conference weren't created with the idea of those lines, and I think they lived and breathed in different media as they were consumed in different ways and as the campaigns needed to evolve. So, let's kill the line.
Cool. Well, talk about Killing Lines. You talked some of the examples that were there. Emma, talk us through some of the examples, and then Christian, we're going to get your perspective from a strategy point of view on the role of content and the value of that. But let's talk first about some of the examples. Which one do you want to talk about first?
I could start with Boost and their Stay Living campaign, which actually then went on to win Grand Prix Award of the Night. There was an award ceremony following the mm-hmm. conference, and yes, they got the top award. So they led a session which was the agency and the client on stage, just kind of discussing this campaign. Which was really interesting because it was kind of, you know, how the sort of client took the risk and did something a bit different, because, as you know, most people have probably seen this campaign. It's a bit sort of hard-hitting, it's slightly graphic, it's certainly gotten a lot of attention, but absolutely perfect for the younger audience that it was trying to reach.
And what were the different media components of it? So it was for a mobile company, so presumably mobile was front and centric. What were the media elements of the campaign?
So there was a lot of online and social element to this. So it's there was some sort of TV and some ad spots and stuff like that. But there was so things like sort of social. They used influential bloggers actually in the videos. And
Are
ads.
There any other kind?
Indeed, which I thought was really,
yes,
really interesting.
Yes,
so,
there are.
that they sort of you know, for that kind of target audience, they tapped into bloggers and bloggers that were influential to this audience and got them sort of starring roles in each of the videos, which was kind of tied in nicely to a different presentation I went to that day, talking about the power of the everyday influencer and real people doing real everyday things kind of being a lot more powerful now, which is good. So they sort of really tapped into that idea for that audience. Other uses of social were sort of through sort of Facebook, sort of gamifying these characters. So you could become one of these characters, and you had sort of certain skills, and then you can sort of pit against your friends, and you know, sort of that sort of game element of sort of playing at zombies. And then, of course, they were doing some online point of sale and sort of sampling and centres and stuff like that.
Cool. So this, Christian, this media mix is a world away from what a mobile company, even an innovative mobile company, would have done even a few years ago, when it might have been a TV online broadcast combo. How much is the media mix changing, and how important or different is this kind of media mix for these kind of content-led or entertainment-led approaches?
I'd say that, and going back to what Peter was saying previously, I really do believe in there's no lines actually when it comes to content, and for this reason, I think pretty much it happens the other way around. So it's rather the content that kind of defines on what media surfaces it will sit, rather than the other way around. What's really good when it comes to ideas like this in content, be it on whatever platform, is first of all, it completely blurs the line, but at the same time it completely opens up a whole new world of possibilities for advertisers as well as media people and also any other partner agency we're working with, and I think this is pretty much why everybody thinks that, and why all of us kind of like all these ideas, because it just makes our lives so much more interesting. It makes it so much more different.
Chris, just a question for you. What does this kind of mean for comms planning? I mean, these types of campaigns evolve and change as they go. I mean, how comms planning wise, you know, do we really, I guess, leverage this and look at how the campaign evolves? I mean, it's quite a tough ask of some people, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think there are three significant implications and three significant things to bear in mind when you're planning in this kind of world. The first is the starting parameters totally change. The starting parameters around there is a fixed message you want to communicate, and we'll broadcast that out with a certain amount of reach and frequency, and at the end of that, a certain percentage of people will be aware of that, and a number of them will then go on perhaps with propensity to purchase and then go on to purchase. You've got to fundamentally change that starting point, I think, to one of engagement, to war. How do we start to think about how we have a more real-time conversation with an audience, and how the results of that won't be so static in time, that it's more of an ongoing conversation. I think that that's really the second main implication as well, which is that the whole campaign and the way things work and the way things are planned have got a lot more real-time and fluidity. The I think increasingly the best examples of media are ones where there may have been certain parameters or certain plans in place at the start, but by the end of that campaign, the media used, what happened, the assets that got created weren't set in stone at the start of that. Mm-hmm. And that has huge implications for agency resource. Mm-hmm. It's got huge implications for how we work with clients, how we approve things. And there's been lots talked about how some of these campaigns have had really rigorous approval timelines needed and planned in to make them happen. And the third is collaboration. The collaboration is hard at the best of times. Collaboration in real time becomes a whole different thing. And I think that as an industry, we've got to continue our efforts to really step change what we do to collaborate, because increasingly these kind of projects need more than one partner at the table to make them happen. And that's got to be a team working seamlessly in an integrated way to keep that campaign or keep that platform activity fresh.
That was that idea of collaboration was another theme that came out of a lot of presentations yesterday. So people, and this Boost Mobile is a good example of saying, you know, we needed to work with several different partners. There are, you know, there is creative, there's film, there's production, there's media, there's PR, and you know, various other things. And that message just kept hitting back and back and back. You know, these were a success because we all collaborated and we all sat in the same room. And you know, another example I can think of is our very own Joel Pearson, who is over here at the moment, our Global Strategy Innovation Director, I think I've got his title right, across Unilever. So he was discussing the Dove Real Beauty and Sketches campaign. And again, he was talking about, you know, during that campaign, because it was global, having sort of eight people in a room for about 4 weeks looking at what was happening in real time. So they had about 20 or 30 countries where this campaign went live, and people from every kind of associated agency and partner and client and everything was all in this room, looking every day as to what was happening, where it was resonating, and then upping and downing the media and the activity to suit. And I thought that was really interesting.
So it's a real direct implications in terms of media investment happening,
yeah,
as a result,
yeah,
of those people in a room monitoring situation,
yeah,
in real time,
yeah,
just like NASA.
Yes,
which is what makes it sound really exciting. Very cool. Let's talk about some of the other things you saw yesterday. What were some of the other examples that we saw?
So I went to one of the sessions I went to was a kind of a you know, best in class from around the globe, and a couple of those that came up were Burberry and its Regent Street store sort of relaunch, I suppose. The Heineken drop series was another one that stood out as well. So Burberry was good because it was a little bit different. It's not sort of, you know, most of these examples have been around sort of a piece of online video or gaming, whereas the Burberry example is merging together the sort of the in-store experience with the digital and online brand experience. So they've got sort of digital panels and screens across the store that, you know, when you look at a product, the screen sort of comes to life and shows you that product, you know, how it looks on, what it does. And they've got sort of all these sort of different other synchronized screens. So they have sort of the rainfall and then the trench coat. And it's absolutely stunning.
I mean, it is the most amazing, store. I actually blogged about it back in July at the time. I noted that The idea of thinking web first and store second is very easily said, but it's very rarely done. Mm. And I don't think it's an accident that Christopher Bailey, who's the creative director at Burberry, says that everything we do on Burberry.com is reflected in this space, not the other way around. And it reflects something that Tom Uglow of Google has said, which is the future of digital is physical. What's your guys' take on the Burberry store and say the content angle and how the two kind of crash together?
I really like the idea. It was not quite clear from the video that I saw what it was about, but it kind of reminded me to this idea of what actually HBO did a couple of years back. I think it was Amsterdam, and the whole consumer journey started from a projection mapping. Mm-hmm. And in the projection mapping, it was basically a huge flat with people living in there, and you could literally like sneak peek into the life of these people. And there was one room in which a murder happened, and then the whole thing was tied back to augmented reality, actually, because I think only with the augmented reality app you could actually see the murder, and then you became a part actually of a really good integrated content because you were the one who started investigating the murder. And I think that was just an awesome idea, how to bring it to life and how to literally put it into all of your consumers' hands who are around.
Mm. Yeah. Look, what I really like about this is in an online world and working in online, often what happens for us is that the customer disappears once they start to head into the retail space. And often we can pick them back up post-purchase. But it's a nice step toward, I guess, integrating online and the in-store experience and starting to kind of work toward seeing how we can start to combine those things. You know, it's no fluke that I guess Apple have just recently launching the iPhone S, where we've got things like AirDrop and iBeams. So we're starting to see, you know, Bluetooth integration with retail. So I think Burberry's a good example of how that's starting to kind of to flesh that out. And you know, the ability for me to see what I've been looking online and check out the products that I've got and where are they in store and connecting my online experience to my retail experience, I think it's a really exciting space.
Something that we did very recently with Google.
Yes, exactly.
And with Play, that idea of making the Play Store physical at a relevant moment or occasion is something that we've done as an agency more recently for Google, certainly.
Yeah, and I mean, I just like the idea of being able to start to connect these things and, you know, the idea of everything being digital and not that it's kind of, you know, digital and then I buy online or I buy offline. Why can't I do both? And it's nice to see a retailer start to head toward that.
Cool. And let's talk about some of the other content examples we saw yesterday. Chipotle are back, yeah, Rams?
Yes. So that was also part of this showcase session that I went to. And that was showing the Scarecrow short film.
Which, for anyone who hasn't seen it, is a beautiful bit of film. What was said about that?
So this was part of a Food with Integrity campaign. When it was sort of presented, it was just a sort of very sort of powerful piece of film. It's quite emotive, like with music with it as well. And it tells a very nice little story and a great message for the brand. And it's another one that's then gone on to develop into an online gaming and kind of environment as well.
And it does feel like that, talking about fluidity, it does feel that gaming element has been engineered from the start in this one. It feels like it's been designed very much as how do we create an animation which is a game. It's almost Pixar-y, you know. It's almost kind of like, it's the Disney or Pixar approach of how do you create the curated version of this story, but also the immersive one that the kids or we can play as well.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, when you do see it, I mean, I'd be intrigued to see whether it is the case, but it looks like a project that started with a very, very good client brief. And it's a client you can tell, you know, they're quite passionate about where they are, where they sit, and where their brand sits. And you know, it's clearly an agency and a client have got together and really believed in that and brought that to life, and it just reeks of it, you know, and it's very believable, and you can just see it's a great brief in an agency that sat down and gone, I've got it. I think we can really bring this to life, and it's a lovely, you know, combination of that, like you can see.
And of course, follows up off the back of the previous execution they did, which was the cover of the song, which I can't, Coldplay,
yes.
Back to the Start.
Yeah.
And I forget who covered that. Was that memorable? but an amazing execution with that Coldplay soundtrack, which launched which has been talked about a lot on the PhD cast. Let's just finish up by talking about some of the measurement aspects of this. So a whole lot of great examples of campaigns, whether it's Burberry or Boost or Chipotle. There was some talk about how we start to measure this, right?
There was a session in the afternoon talking about ROI of branded content.
The inevitable after lunch,
yes.
ROI session.
Indeed.
No doubt, standing room only.
That promises to give you the answer and doesn't quite, as these go. So it was, again, this was a sort of a 3 or 4 person panel discussion session. They talked about a lot of sort of obvious things there about, you know, setting objectives up front, which goes across the board for any kind of project or campaign you're doing. They talked about things, measuring things like exposure and affinity, as well as sort of engagement. I think they did, you know, they talked about, it felt quite sort of a slightly fluffy in places, kind of presentation, so they didn't really go into depth in talking about sort of social buzz and engagement, looking at kind of reach over time and looking at kind of, you know, how things resonate with an audience and doing that in real time. I think that was kind of probably missing. There was some talk around, you know, just general, you know, reach numbers and that kind of stuff, but I felt that they didn't really hit home with this idea of, you know, how you track something in real time and see how it's resonating with an audience.
Peter and Christian, how important is getting measurement and getting this, the idea of ROI and social or content right? How important is getting that right?
I think it's getting, I mean, definitely as we have much more ability to measure things that we were not able to measure a couple of years ago, I think it's getting more and more important, and I think also us as agency feel like a really increasing pressure on what KPIs to live up for whenever it comes to content particularly. I think content as well is even probably even more complex, and there are some good ways of measurement that we're gonna talk about in a little bit, but I think what's really important to think is go back to the roots where the content came from and just think about what we were talking. These are also, in these cases that we just mentioned, these are really complex kind of emotive messages, mm-hmm. and this is what content is really good at, and this is, you need to start thinking about what you would like to do with your brand, what are your communication objectives with your brand that you will be later on able to measure as a result of the content that you have produced. And I think this happens on a bigger scale, but on a smaller scale, I think I'm just going to give it over.
What does best practice in this area look like?
Look, I guess it's the next evolution of what we're seeing in digital. Digital came along and everyone went, wow, we can measure everything. And what it's kind of boiled down to is digital's, yes, is a little quicker, but it's the good old-fashioned right message in the right place at the right time that we've done for years and years. And look, I believe it's the same with content. What we're doing is building these pieces of content to try and send a message to the right people, and as a media agency, we're going to try and get that message in front of the right people at the right time.
I think what's key on that is that yes, it is very much what we've always done, but right message, right place, right time, or certainly right place, right time, used to be determined by marketers and agencies.
Yes.
This spot will go out there in this program, that billboard is going to go there. The place and time is now increasingly dictated and determined by people, yeah?
Yeah, I agree, but you know, it what it probably does is sees a move more toward how do we put a message in front of audiences. So rather than spots and dots and times with individuals, what we're now talking about is, you know, how do we capture groups of people in particular places and in places of interest. You know, there's no fluke around some of these campaigns around the types of content are targeted toward communities. So it's kind of a step back toward that audience thing. So instead of being it's this person, this person, this person, it's how do we engage with a community?
Cool. And then indeed on that community, how do we give them an ROI? How do they get a return for their interest in that content as well? Which is perhaps the last element of this, which we could probably talk about next week, because that is about all we have time for on this week's PhDcast. A big thank you to Peter.
Thank you.
And Emma. And Christian.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us. That was the PhDcast, and we'll be back next week. Promise.
To get more from PhD Australia, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Google Plus @PhD Australia.